is still young, but he's at that age where the back starts to feel those things. And that was quite a job. So they got that one out there and took it to our house because Ruth wanted Aaron to have that piano. It's her piano. It was actually Sonia's piano when she was a teenager. And so we got that one out. And then they had to get the one we had in our house and had to get it out of there. So they had double duty on hauling pianos today. And I appreciate them doing that for me. All right, the book of Psalms tonight. I love the book of Psalms. And we're going to look at Psalm 101. You say, how did you decide? Well, I just flopped my Bible open and pointed at a page. And no, that's not exactly how it went. Psalm 101. It's 8 verses long. We'll start in verse number 1 and read the entire psalm. Psalm 101. David wrote this, I will sing of mercy and judgment unto thee, O Lord, will I sing. I will behave myself wisely in a perfect way. O when wilt thou come unto me? I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. I hate the work of them that turn aside. It shall not cleave to me. A froward heart shall depart from me. I will not know a wicked person. Whoso privily slandereth his neighbor, him will I cut off. Him that hath a high look and a proud heart will not I suffer. Mine eyes shall be upon the faithful of the land, that they may dwell with me. He that walketh in a perfect way, he shall serve me. He that worketh deceit shall not dwell within my house. He that telleth lies shall not tarry in my sight. I will early destroy all the wicked of the land, that I may cut off all wicked doers from the city of the Lord. Psalm 101, it says right under the heading Psalm 101, hopefully in your Bible, it says a Psalm of David. Not all the Psalms are identified by their penmen, but this is one of many that is related to David or recognized as being one of David's Psalms. And David wrote this Psalm upon becoming the king of Israel. Now whether it was upon the death of Saul and his ascending to the throne, or some believe it was a few years later when he combined both Judah and Israel together and united the kingdom to become king over that. But one or the other, David, this is his psalm of resolve. His psalm of resolve. He's making some decisions as he becomes the king of Israel. He makes some decisions. He sets some things down in stone. And it is his resolve. Notice he says in verse 1, I will. In verse 2, I will. In verse 3, I will. In verse 8, I will. 4 of these verses start with David saying, I'm making a resolve. This is what I will do. Now notice it also says in the middle of verse number 2, I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. It says near the end of verse 4 or the middle, I will not know a wicked person. So 9 times in this psalm, the word will appears, and David's saying, I will, I will. He says in verse 8, whoso privately slandereth his neighbor, him will I. All right, not I will, but will I. Cut off him that hath a high look and a proud heart, will I not suffer. And he said at the end of verse 1, unto thee, O Lord, will I sing. So that will. 9 times in this psalm, David says, here's what I'm going to do. I will. Do this. It's a psalm of resolve. Not only the word will, but then there's the word shall. Notice in verse 3, the end of the verse. I hate the work of them that turn aside. It shall not cleave to me. That's a decision. I will not let it. I shall not let it cleave to me. Verse 4. A froward heart shall depart from me. Verse 5. Mine eyes shall be upon the faithful of the land. The end of the verse, he that walketh in a perfect way, he shall serve me. Verse 7, he said, uses the word shall twice. He that worketh deceit shall not dwell within my house. He that telleth lies shall not tarry in my sight. 9 wills and 6 shalls. David is making a resolve as he ascends to the throne and becomes the king of Israel. Here's what I'm going to do. And here's what I'm not going to do. Now, I hate to give the spoiler alert on this, but David did not always live up to those resolves that he made in that chapter. He failed sometimes. But we have a much higher success rate when we make resolves than when we do not make them. I will do this. I shall do that. I will not do this. I shall not do that. If we don't set those down from the beginning, if we have no resolve, we're in trouble. Charles Haddon Spurgeon, that great preacher, said it this way: he who does not resolve to do well is likely to do ill. Resolve to do well. I like the hymn that we sing: I am resolved no longer to linger, charmed by the world's delight. We need to make some resolves. David made it. David's resolve upon becoming king. Historians tell us that Psalm 101 was used by many European monarchs at their swearing-in ceremonies. They would have Psalm 101 read as they got ready to lead their countries or their nations. In fact, there are times mentioned where a king got ready to appoint someone, a deputy or some office under him, and he would send them Psalm 101 to let them know what was expected and required of them to serve in that office. One time, one deputy sent to a newly appointed man, "Here's one. If you're going to appoint other people, I want you to read that so you look for people that meet this description and these resolves." We need to have some resolve, some determination, some dedication in our life, some decisions to make it how we're going to do things. It is said that even in early American history, this psalm was read and pledged publicly. Now, if they say, "So help me God," some folks get nervous. But back in early America, this psalm was read when someone was sworn into some kind of an office, so that they would have a resolve to do right. As we look at this psalm, then, it is a psalm of a man becoming king, a psalm of many governmental leaders that have been sworn into particular offices. So it is a psalm of resolve, and it is a psalm that kind of describes leadership. What a leader ought to be like. Many people have made lots of money in the last few decades putting out books about leadership. John Maxwell is a secular writer, pretty much, and he's made a living off of leadership. Christian authors are writing books on leadership. You want a good book on leadership? How about the book of Psalms? How about this chapter 101? Make some resolves to be a good leader, whether it be in a governmental position, whether it be as the pastor of a church, whether it be the head of a home, whether it be serving the Lord in some capacity and having responsibility for others. Have a good resolve. We're going to see two things basically in Psalm 101 this evening. First of all, and this psalm is kind of perfectly divided in half. It is eight verses. It is 10 sentences. Every verse is a complete sentence except for verse number 2, which actually has 3 sentences in it. But every verse is a complete sentence, and each of them kind of describes something for us. The first half of the chapter, or the psalm, verse 1 to 4, talk about the personal character of a model leader. The personal character of a model leader. And then I'll go ahead of myself. Verse 5 to 8 show the public conduct. The public conduct of a model leader. Isn't it a wonderful thing that the Word of God can cover something like that? How to be a good leader in whatever capacity you have it. Maybe it's a Sunday school teacher. Maybe it's a mother in the home. Whatever it is, we're called to lead some folks. And the personal character in the first 4 verses and the public conduct in the second 4 verses. And of course, that's become one has to come before the other. There has to be personal character before there can be good public conduct. You want to know why somebody's public conduct is not good? It's because they don't have personal character. And if you want leadership of a nation, a state, a city, a church, a home, a business place, you want personal character and public conduct. And one leads into the other. Let's look at David's personal character as he makes his vows here in verse 1 to 4. Notice he says in verse number 1, he's going to have a balanced attitude. A balanced attitude. In verse 1, I will sing of mercy and judgment. Unto thee, O Lord, will I sing. Balanced. I will sing of mercy and judgment. Those are two contrasting items. Mercy is forgiveness. Judgment is justice. When do you exercise mercy? When do you exercise judgment? Oh, that takes some wisdom, does it not? In our homes, dealing with children, dealing with grandchildren. When do we lay down the law? When do we overlook things? Can I give you a personal testimony that I'm noticing as I grow older? The mercy is less and the judgment is more. As I look around this world, it just isn't like when I was 20 and 30 years old. There's something wrong with people today. It's not like it was in the good old days. And everybody's just out of whack and they're crazy and they're insane. You know what that is? That's my judgment getting increased and me losing track of some mercy here. Understanding that young people are young people. Kids are kids. I come walking through the church on Wednesday to pick up things and get ready for Wednesday evening church. And I go through here and I find stuff that kids have left all over the place in here. And the old grumpy grouch in me says, why don't these kids pick up after themselves? I walk in the bathroom and it hasn't been flushed. What's the matter with these kids? And I remember, I was once 6 years old. I wish I could say I once was in church as a kid and left things around. And so by the time I'm done, I remember, let's not be so harsh. Let's thank God that we've got these things to pick up and deal with, because a lot of churches don't have any kids around. There's got to be a balance between mercy and judgment. Now, if you get too merciful and don't lay down the law at any time, you're going to have some problems. But if you're harsh all the time and have judgment with no mercy, you're going to have some problems. So you know what the king said? I'm going to sing of mercy and of judgment. The king realized, I need a balanced attitude. I need to know when mercy is called for and when judgment is called for. And there are times for both. And that takes some wisdom. Not only is there a balanced attitude, but verse 2. There are three sentences here. The first part says, I will behave myself wisely in a perfect way. Blameless conduct. A balanced attitude and blameless conduct. I will behave myself wisely in a perfect way. You know what he's saying? I'm not going to react rashly. No knee-jerk reactions. Some people can seem to react and do it temperately. I don't know if you're like me, but I'm always saying after something's over, I usually don't react, because if I do, it's usually the wrong reaction. So I wait till later. Then I say, boy, I wish I would have said this. Or I wish I would have done that. After I think about it, now I know exactly what I should have done. You know what that means? We need to learn to behave wisely and in a perfect way. Because if we just simply react, you know what we do? We blow up Facebook. That's what Facebook is. Somebody hears something and repeats it without thinking about it, without meditating over it, without considering it, and they just throw it out there and it blows up. He said, I'll have blameless conduct. That suggests carefulness, thoughtfulness, integrity and wholesomeness. Thinking about it before we act. Blameless conduct. How many times in life have you said, if I could just get those words back? But it doesn't work that way. Once they come out of the mouth, you can suck in all the air you want. You can try to back inhale as much as you want. You can't get the words back. We used to say on the emails, once you hit the send button, it's gone, it's out there. Now, once you hit the post button, whatever it is, it's out there. Be careful. David said in his personal conduct, he was going to have blameless, or in his personal character, he was going to have blameless, he sought to have blameless conduct. We'll not be perfect. We'll not always be wise. But if we aren't at least resolving to do so, we'll never come close. The second sentence in verse number 2 says, "Oh, when wilt thou come unto me?" This is David's spiritual hunger. His spiritual hunger. He's got a balanced attitude, a blameless conduct, and a spiritual hunger. When wilt thou come unto me? He desires fellowship with God. He indicates that he knows he needs God to govern right. Oh, if every political leader would understand they need God to govern right. How do you make decisions without God? If a person is making decisions without God, they're rolling the dice, so to speak, as whether or not their decisions are going to be right. How can you get right the majority of times if God's not in the equation? If human understanding and human wisdom are the best you've got, you're going to make a mess out of things. David recognized that. He said, "Lord, what I need is I need your presence. What I need is I need you around me. Oh, when wilt thou come unto me? I need you, Lord, in this decision. I need you, Lord, to know what direction to take. I need you." All that we would recognize every day and every moment of every day. How dependent we are on the presence of God to do that which is right. David experienced being in the wrong place at the wrong time without God. And so his prayer here was for spiritual hunger. Oh, when wilt thou come unto me? He says at the end of verse 2, the third sentence, I will walk within my house. So this is not his public conduct. This is personal character. I'll walk within my house with a perfect heart. His pure motives. His pure motives. I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. See, many times we'll not do things in public that we will do in private because nobody's watching. Nobody sees. Nobody knows. We're in the house. It's interesting, the next phrase in verse 3, it says, I will set no wicked thing before my eyes. That comes right after the thing about the house. But David is making a resolve to have pure motives. He says, I will behave myself wisely. I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. His private walk within my house. He wanted his private walk to have a perfect heart. Is that what we desire? The presence of God and a perfect walk even when nobody knows what's going on. That's the true test of our character, isn't it? What we do for show in front of other people, that's not our character. What we do when we're all alone, that's the test of our character. David said, I want your presence and I want to walk within my house with a perfect heart. In verse number 3, he says, I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. I hate the work of them that turn aside, it shall not cleave to me. David here is talking about the discernment of influence. The discernment of influence. I will set no wicked thing before my eyes. What we see with our eyes influences us. You know how we know that? Because all the people that are scared to death of the pandemic. Do you know why they're scared to death? Because somebody's telling them to be scared to death. You know what I do? I don't watch news. I don't turn on news. I don't sit on my couch and watch news. I have absolutely no contact with the news. So you know what happens when I go out in the morning? I go out with a happy heart. I get in my car and I drive to work and I stop here and I stop there and I just go through my day and I, no worries. I walked into the bank today and everybody looked like a robber, a bank robber. They all had masks on. I felt like I should be worried. I was the only one that didn't have a mask on. Nobody's ever said anything to me in 9 months of going through this. Nobody's ever said anything to me anywhere I've been about not having one on. But everybody else, and I'm trying to be careful, not judgmental, but we watch it and we watch it and we watch it, and now the curfew is going to start tomorrow night. Tomorrow night at 10. When most of you I know are out running the streets. From 10 at night to 5 in the morning, when most of you are sowing your wild oats, there's now going to be a curfew. I've decided that Sunday evening service is going to start at 10 o'clock. And we'll go for about an hour and a half to 11:30, just because. But it's getting, and we're getting ready for lockdown number 3, because lockdown number 1 didn't work, and lockdown number 2 didn't work. So now number 3 is going to work. And the only reason we know that is because everybody's telling us that. And we watch it, and we watch it, and people are scared to death. I go into different places, and I hear people talking about it, and they're saying, the sky's falling, the world's going to crash, everything's going bad. I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes, watching the influence that we get by that which we watch. And that's just one example of things. But we are influenced by what our eyes take in. David said, I'm going to guard my eyes. I'm going to protect my eyes so that I don't look upon any of those things. Now, again, would to God David had fulfilled that completely. Had he not been on that roof in 2 Samuel chapter 11 and forgetting to guard his eyes. The discernment of influence. I hate the work of them at the end of verse 3 that turn aside, it shall not cleave to me. Separating from those. Separating. Separating, separating. That's something people don't want to hear anymore. Stay away from evildoers. A lot of times people say, I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Well, you shouldn't have been there. Separate from some things. Discernment of influence. And then he says in verse number 4, a froward heart shall depart from me. I will not know a wicked person. David desired in his personal character to have companions with character. Have companions with character. That's why we get together, church. That's why we fellowship one with another. To get refreshed, to be encouraged, to be around people that have the same goal and the same ideas and the same thoughts. That's why we come aside out of the world that we live in. We can't withdraw from it. We're required to live in it. We have to live in it. But David said, a froward heart shall depart from me. I won't get along with them. That word froward we've seen many times, especially when we went through Proverbs in Sunday school, adult Sunday school. The word froward is the opposite of forward. Forward is eyes set and going this direction. Froward, and spell correct, doesn't even recognize the word froward. Every time I would type it, it would change it to forward. And I have to go back and manually change it again. But froward means not forward, but going off in a wrong direction. And David says, a froward heart shall depart from me. I don't want anything to do with those that have a froward heart. I'll not surround myself with companions that have a froward heart. I will not know a wicked person. The personal character of a model leader in verse 1 to 4. Then in verse 5 to 8, the public conduct of that model leader. Again, you have to build the foundation before you can put the structure on top of it. You have to have personal character before you can have good public conduct. In verse 5, 7, and 8, and this is kind of unusual, but verse 5, 7, and 8, David speaks of those he will punish. He lists some people. Again, withdrawing and separating from some. Who is he going to separate from? He says in verse 5, "Whoso privately or privily slandereth his neighbor, him will I cut off." Those that make false accusations, slander. Oh, Christian, be careful. Don't repeat everything that's said just because it makes the person you don't like look bad. It may not be true. I have found that so much on Facebook that the people that I think that I like, I hear someone that doesn't like them saying something or repeating something, and I will private message them, not post it on Facebook. I'll private message them and say, "Did you research this? Did you see if this statement is true? What's your source for that?" They never answer. They never respond to that. And many times I just don't even try doing it whatsoever because it comes to no end. But slander, repeating things just because you want to. David says, those that give misrepresentations and false accusations, whoso privately slandereth his neighbor, him will I cut off. I'll cast him away. I won't spend any time with him. He says at the end of verse 5, him that hath a high look and a proud heart, those he will punish, the slanderer, those with the high look and the proud heart, those that have the attitude of superiority, of arrogance. You know those kind of folks. You rarely find them in church, which is a blessing. But you find them in life. Those that think they're better than everybody else. Think they're always right and everybody that disagrees with them is always wrong. David says about those folks, him that hath a high look and a proud heart will I not suffer. David is picking his friends carefully, picking his appointments to his governmental office carefully. He's vetting them. He's looking at their credentials. And he's saying, if they're slanderers, I don't want anything to do with them. If they're proud and have a high look, I don't want anything to do with them. Down in verse 7, he says, he that worketh deceit shall not dwell within my house. He's protecting. You know why? You know why David is choosing these people for his government? Because he's protecting them to whom he reigns over. Why don't you want a deceitful man in your place, David? Well, because if he's going to be ruling over my people, I want a man of honesty, a man of integrity, a man who can be trusted, a man or woman, we might say, that when they say something, we know it's true. David says, he that worketh deceit shall not dwell within my house. You know a deceitful man, a deceitful woman? Have no company with that one. Verse 7, he also says, he that telleth lies shall not tarry in my sight. Boy, you're wiping out a good number of the population, David. You're getting rid of all the slanderers, all the proud people, all the deceitful folks, and all the liars. There's not too many left. You're looking for that minority, and that's exactly the truth. David wants that minority. That's who he wants to surround himself with, that small minority. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's who we desire to be around. Our companions show our character. If we can look at a person and see who they hang around with and who they get along well with, we know what they're like. Because the old expression is birds of a feather flock together. David said, they that want deceit, they that work deceit, he that telleth lies. In verse number 8, I will early destroy all the wicked of the land, that I may cut off all wicked doers from the city of the Lord. He promises to punish the wicked. The slanderer, those with a high look, those that work deceit, those that tell lies, those that are wicked. Those are the ones that David says, I'm going to punish. We think of the life of David, and sometimes he tried to show mercy when he shouldn't have showed mercy. He had some people under his governmental reign that were wicked. David gave them space and gave them time. And when David was dying, he told his son Solomon, get rid of him, get rid of him, get rid of him. I should have, I didn't. David did not always fulfill all of his resolve, but he had the resolve. I will early destroy all the wicked of the land, that I may cut off all the wicked doers from the city of the Lord. Those he will punish in verse 5, 7, and 8. And then verse number 6, he tells us those he will promote. In verse number 6, mine eyes shall be upon the faithful of the land, that they may dwell with me. Isn't that interesting? Between these other verses of those that he's going to punish, he contrasts a whole other group of people. It says, mine eyes shall be upon the faithful of the land, that they may dwell with me. The slanderers, cut them off. The liars, the deceitful people, the proud, cut them off. Cast them out. The wicked, get rid of them. The faithful of the land, I will dwell with them. Some have seen in this psalm, especially the last half of it, a prophecy of the millennial reign of Christ, where he does get rid of the wicked and the slanderer and the proud and the arrogant. And he does dwell among the faithful in, the end of verse 8, the city of the Lord, the New Jerusalem. But David is making this vow and saying, mine eyes shall be upon the faithful of the land, that they may dwell with me. The company that we desire. The folks that we want to be around. Not the slanderer. Not the proud. Not the wicked. But the faithful. The faithful. Oh, how our heart should rejoice when we're around the faithful. Wednesday night. Many of us here are not out in the workforce. Some of you are. I remember working full-time during the week, and Wednesday night, I couldn't wait to get to church on Wednesday night. After out being in the world, being around everybody else Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, Wednesday evening was just so refreshing to be around the faithful of the Lord. No deceit, no slander, no guile, none of these things. David said, mine eyes shall be upon the faithful of the land, and they shall dwell with me. He that walketh in a perfect way, he shall serve me. David's cabinet, David's appointments, are going to be those that walked with the heart that David had. He said he would walk within his house in verse number 2 with a perfect heart. And he wants those that have a perfect heart to walk with him and to serve him. These desires were put in David's heart as he began his reign as king. That's what made David, as the Bible tells us later, a man after God's own heart. Because his resolve was right. He wasn't perfect in all his ways, as we well know. But he had a perfect heart. His resolve was right. If you have a person with a good resolve, you've got a good person. Doesn't mean they'll always live up to every jot and tittle because we're in this body of flesh. But when they do, when they break their resolve, they'll write things like Psalm 51, which David wrote when he broke his resolve. That great penitent prayer. Against thee and thee only have I done this sin, and done this wickedness in thy sight. A good test for those that want to be in a position of leadership. How's their personal conduct? How's their personal character? How is their public conduct? Psalm 101 is given to us to help us understand and to identify those with the right character and those with the right conduct. David desired to have it. And he penned these words and recorded them, not just for the heads of state and the monarchs and the presidents that reign and are on high, but for every single one of us in our personal life, that we can have that personal conduct and that personal character and that public conduct. Let's stand together tonight with our heads bowed and our eyes closed. Father, thank you for this psalm. Thank you for David's heart, for his resolve. And God, may we resolve to have that kind of personal character that David resolved to have. May we resolve to have that public conduct that David resolved to have. And Father, help us to set these resolutions. Help us, Father, to set these I wills and I shall. Because if we don't, we'll fall easily into Satan's snares, to the wiles of the devil, into his traps. So, Father, give us a heart of resolve to watch our company, our companionship, our fellowship with you, the things that we do when no one else is looking and no one else is around. Help us, Father, to walk with you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. What page do we have, Brother Matthews? Page 288 in the songbook. We'll sing the first and the last verse of page 288. No longer to linger, charmed by the world's delight. Things that are higher, things that are nobler, these have allured.